This is gonna hurt. It's time for the Suffering Podcast.
There are only two directions in life that you can run. If you run backwards into digression, it is possible to fall in the deepest, darkest hole. If you run forward, inevitably, you're leaving something behind. For most, standing still is never an option. A life of service can come at a great cost. As we run towards the danger, that often means we're running away from our own demons. On occasion, those demons are faster than we think. We are always trying to advance our position, which is why moving forward is so important. On the days we'd like to take a break, we know that's when life will catch up. We put one foot in front of the other and try to maintain some vertical momentum. I'm Kevin Donaldson, here with Mike Falase, and welcome to the Suffering Podcast. If you're a fan of overcoming adversity and overcoming suffering, then we're for you, because that's what we do here, and that's the stories that we highlight. So do me a favor, hit that like button, subscribe to the channel, please comment, ring the bell so you can get notified of all new content, and now you can join. Follow us on all social media so you can find out what we're up to. On this episode of the Suffering Podcast, we welcome the comeback coach himself, Richard Kaufman, to discuss the suffering of vertical momentum. Richard was in a real dark place, but he got out of that place, but he makes sure never to leave anybody behind, and that's what I admire so much about you. Thank you so much for coming in tonight.
Oh, it's my honor. It's a blessing just to be here and hang out with you guys.
Before we get into anything,
we're not over yet. You may not say that at the end of the show.
Before we get into anything, let's throw a big shout out to our marquee sponsor. That's Toyota of Hackensack. We don't trust anybody as cops, but we do trust them. So go to ToyotaHackensack.com and let them find you a car. And we just had another one sold from them.
Oh, well, see that?
Yeah.
So we're doing good.
Listen, I always like to support the people that support us. So, Richard, every week we take a question from our audience. This week's question comes from PDK4726. So what keeps you on your path? You're on this very motivating path that wasn't always the case. So you need to keep on the straight and narrow. What keeps you on the straight and narrow on your path?
And I knew you were going to ask me that question.
Because he sent it in.
Yeah. I'm PDK, but I can't tell you about that. I couldn't sleep last night because I was thinking about this question. And if you see it in my post today, I actually, every 6 months, I write my own obituary.
That's interesting.
So for me to stay on my path is when I write my obituary, I want to be that guy that I wrote about. So if I say I'm going to be a great husband, a great father, a great son, a great friend, I got to do those things in order to be that man in the obituary. So that's what keeps me on the straight and narrow, because I actually wrote my obituary out.
Do you set goals that you haven't reached yet, you haven't attained yet?
Oh, yeah. I have. Like, my goal this year is just to touch 3 million people. So, I mean, if your goals can – or your goals should scare you. If your goals don't scare you, they're not big enough.
You know, it's funny. I was going to say that. Like, it's more like goals. Like, you write your obituary. That's kind of like a morbid way of writing your own goals, you know?
Yeah.
Because you want to be that person. It's just like writing out your goals. You know, I want to do this. I want to do that. I want to do this.
So yeah. David Goggins put something like that very, very, very cool, a good way to say it. He goes, when I go meet my maker, there's going to be a board of all the things that I was supposed to be. I was supposed to be this. I was supposed to be this. I was supposed to be this. I want to do so much in my life that my creator's going to look at me and go, well, you weren't supposed to do that, and you weren't supposed to do that, but you did it anyway. Yeah. So I always thought that was a cool way to put it, and it's kind of same along the same lines.
No, that's where I got it from. I got it from I listened to all Goggins' books,
yeah,
and talked to him a few times. So he's one of the guys I'm like, it makes a lot of sense.
I love what he says, and I was trying to play something for my wife. He just curses way too much. Motherfucker and this and motherfucker that.
Like Gary Vee in a way.
Yeah, Gary Vee, who I've spoken to.
You know, when I do die, they're going to have things up there that I did.
Told everybody else who died. And
they're going to shut the door. No, you're not coming in.
Mike, what do you think? How do you stay on your path?
You know, and we've all gone down that deep, dark place, you know, that I just keep reminding myself of those low moments. And I just don't want to do it again. You know, so it just kind of, it centers you and keeps you going straight forward.
You know, so I never forget the past, but I tell my kids this all the time, and I've spoken about this on the show before, and I always go by the mantra and the ethos, remember tomorrow. So you can do whatever you want today. You want to go out there and chug a fifth of vodka, go do it, but you better remember tomorrow. I've spent so much of my life trying to live right
be sober, be a good person, that if I were to slip up and do that stuff, I'm going to regret whatever I did in the moment for that momentary pleasure tomorrow, because I'm going to wake up with a hangover. You know, I'll probably be sleeping on the front lawn. Who knows if my wife would let me back in the house.
All body parts that you didn't even know you had were going to hurt.
Exactly. And that pain of that hangover and, you know, amongst other things, the disappointment of all the years I just threw away just for momentary pleasure. So I teach my kids that too. You know, you can go out and do whatever you want to do, but you better remember tomorrow. And if you want to play big boy games, you better be willing to pay the big boy price.
You know, and I love that. Like, I've had many Navy SEALs on, and I love their mantra that there is no tomorrow.
Yeah.
It's only today.
Tomorrow's never guaranteed.
Yeah. So
and the only easy day was yesterday.
Yesterday, yeah. So I love that. That's, you know, if you want to know where you're going to be in 5 years, it's what you're doing at this moment. 5 years from now, you'll know where you're going to be.
So we were talking about Jocko before the show started. And one of the things that Jocko says is everybody wants to do this and wants to do that, but they procrastinate because mm-hmm. a lot of people don't know where to start, how to begin or anything. He goes, you know what is the antidote for procrastination? It's just a start.
Yeah.
It's that simple. So PDK 4726, AKA Richard Kaufman, thank you for sending that question in. Keep sending in your questions and we will try to get them on the air. So Richard, you run this ultra successful podcast, Vertical Momentum Podcast, which I adore. You work really hard at it. You've crafted, you've written multiple books. I've become a big fan of what you do. I think you're on the right path, but you've come from a lot of pain. So why don't you give our audience a little bit of background on yourself, how you grew up?
I was the guy that when your parents said, don't hang out with that guy.
You were him.
That was me. I was the guy. But I'm also the guy, if you're walking down the street in Harlem, I'm the guy you're going to want next to you. So I have so many different, you know, things that I'm the opposite. So many, like, I was, at one time I got thrown out of the military for being a drug addict. Got back in, almost got thrown out again, but 9/11 saved me. But then I went from the worst soldier to soldier of the year within 3 years. So I went from the worst to the best.
Well, you know everything at that point. You know what being the worst is, and you'll never know if you're the best if you don't know what the worst is.
You learn from your own mistakes.
Yeah.
So you know, I made a lot of mistakes. I mean, you know, I'm a ninth grade dropout.
I also know you're a son of Nutley.
Yeah, I hung out in Nutley. I met my wife on Church Hill. That's where I met her 40 years ago, and now we're married with three beautiful kids. So I'm originally from Belleville, so we kind of had that Belleville Nutley hated each other, always fighting
the rivalries.
Yeah, always
all the Italians in the Belleville Nutley area.
Yeah, fighting at St. Anthony's feast every year.
As big a county as Essex County is, it's pretty small when it comes to rivalries.
Yeah.
So I mean, I dropped out. I had my first drink at 11, full blown alcoholic 13.
Full blown alcoholic. So talk to us a little bit about how you got your first drink at 11. Somebody's feeding you alcohol.
Well, what happened was my parents were active alcoholics. So they went out for New Year's. So I found a liquor cabinet and
blackberry brandy. Was that your first drink?
It was scotch.
Oh my God. And you still drank after that?
It was like turpentine.
One taste of scotch, especially at 11 years old, I'd probably never drink again.
I think most of the world started drinking on blackberry brandy. I'm almost positive of that because I've ran into a lot of people. Their first nip was that warms you.
Yeah. No, the girls were like Boone's Farm Strawberry.
Mad Dog 2020.
Yeah. So I had my first drink at 11, and my cousins were drinking with me that night. They were like 17, 18. They went to bed, and I'm like, what do you mean you're going to bed? There's still alcohol in this cabinet. I'm 11. So that's not a very great thing to be.
Well, so nobody drinks for no reason. All right. So what led you to do that? Was it something the older kids were doing, or you thought this was what?
It just looked cool. Like, look, I came from an Italian household. Everybody drinks wine with every meal, every holiday. Somebody's getting liquored up, arguing, fighting. So I'm like, it's what we do.
You know,
do you think your parents being active alcoholics led you to that? Like, because you saw them drinking, so you say, yeah, if they're doing it, why can't I?
Yeah, but you know what it was, because I had my first taste, and immediately I was hooked. Immediately, because before I had that drink, I was Richard. soon as I had that drink, I was Rick. I became a totally different person.
It's like Lawrence Taylor and LT.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So it was like, once I had that drink, I had that courage to be somebody else. So that's why I started drinking heavily, because I don't have to be Richard anymore. I can be this new creation, Rick.
See, I grew up in a household with an alcoholic as well. And they used to, whenever there was parties around, they used to have those Miller Nips.
Yeah.
Remember those? They're like the 7 ounce things.
Yep.
So there, it was a 4th of July. I'll never forget it. They went outside to watch the fireworks, and there's one of these nips laying on the table. I take it and I drink it. I mean, I drink the whole thing down. Now, here's the problem. I'm about 7 years old or something like that. I know they're going to come back in and realize that nip is gone. So what do? As a 7-year old kid, you fill it with water.
Water, yeah.
You fill it with water.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget my dad's friend, who was a raging alcoholic, comes in and says, "Man, I got to slow down because this stuff's starting to taste like water."
So you were watering it down.
I was watering it down. But yeah, it was easier back then. It's like the whole reason I started smoking is because my parents were smokers and it was easy access to all that stuff. It was just normal.
But then also I've talked to many people, and there's a brother and a sister, and the father was an alcoholic. And I asked, "Well, why do you drink, or why don't you drink?" "Well, my father drank." So it's the same kids.
Yeah.
Same reason either one drinks or other doesn't drink is my father drank.
You see kids, 3 or 4 kids in a family, one of them's a stone cold drunk because the father drank. I had a friend of mine growing up, he wouldn't touch a drop of alcohol because his grandfather was a drunk. But his brother died of a drug overdose.
Right. So you see the worst, you see what can become, you see the future. Because I have the gene. So if you talk nature versus nurture, I have the gene for alcohol. Most of my family is alcoholics.
My mother's whole side of the family was either alcoholics or drug addicts.
And I was always conscious of that. I was always conscious. It never stopped me. But again, going back, this is something I tell my kids. It's like there's that one person out there. There's those people out there that can have one drink of alcohol today and never touch it again for 30 years. They just don't need it. They don't want it. There's a person that can have a cigarette today and never need it. There's a person that can smoke weed today and never touch it again. And the same thing with heroin, cocaine, down the line. And I tell my kids this. I said, you don't know which one you are. And the only way to find out is to try it. But are you going to roll those dice?
Yeah, because, I mean, it's fun until it stops being fun.
Right. Right.
And then peer pressure jumps in.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, when you're that young.
Yep.
You have that one drink, and then all your friends, come on, that's only one. Have another one, have another one, have another one.
Lightweight, then you start throwing around.
The bad thing is when you're 13 and you're putting away two cases a night and a fifth of Sambuca.
Oh, you were one of those
at
kids.
At 13, and you're out drinking the adults, that's when there's an issue. And I was 120 pounds.
I had a friend of mine that had this enormous constitution, and his uncle worked at a beer distributor, which was even worse. And he was an alcoholic too. So there was beer all over the place. At 15, 16 years old, he drank a case of beer.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I can't drink a case of beer, and I was twice the size of him. But some people just.
Yeah, when we would have drinking games, I was the drinker.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, I don't want to throw, just let me drink. So even when I won, I'm like, let me just take a drink.
So you were known as the drinker.
Oh, I was the guy.
Yeah.
I mean, when I met my wife, I was drinking. I would drink straight out the keg. It was like, who needed glass? Like, just drink straight out the keg.
It takes too much time to put it in a glass and to drink it. Just
now, you're a 9th grade dropout.
Yeah.
But was it out in the open that you drank, or did you try to hide it?
Oh no, I was the guy that was wearing sunglasses in the back of the room, passing out, nodding out at in 8th grade.
No kidding.
9th grade.
And the teachers didn't notice this? Didn't identify?
Well, you know what it is? I had a severe case of ADHD, a slight case of dyslexia. So they always told me, you're dumb. No, you just told me 1 + 1 = 2. I get it. Let's move on.
Mm-hmm.
But no, they keep teaching me the same thing. So, of course, I'm going to rebel. And I'm going to be like, and then I started fooling around. And they're like, yeah, you're dumb at that. And this is back in the 80s. So they don't know what ADHD is at that point.
No, you were hyper.
Oh, I was freaking wired.
Or you're a problem student.
Right. Don't give them sugar.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That was it. You know, you don't get. We all had hyper kids in class. Don't give them sugar. But that didn't seem to calm them down when they had no sugar.
No.
They just, they're high metabolism, I guess. But anyway, you're moving on, and are your friends hanging around you? Or you, like you said, you were the guy that the parents said, stay away from this guy. Because of alcohol, I'm assuming, What did your friends in your orbit think about your drinking capabilities?
Well, they just knew I wasn't normal. Because, I mean, even when they were going, like, we would party at my friend's house from Nutley, a bunch of Nutley boys hanging out. And we'd all get hammered Friday, Saturday night. Well, they're getting ready for school on Sunday night. I'm still going. I'm not ready to go home.
What did your parents say about you dropping out in ninth grade?
They weren't there. I pretty much raised myself from like the age of 14. So I was my own parent.
I was going to say 13 or ninth grade, you're probably 13 or 14 years old. Now you had nothing to do. Did you get a job or anything, or you just?
I mean, I took shitty jobs, pumping gas. I worked at the ShopRite in Belleville. Nothing substantial. I lived on the streets for a while. Like my parents, they worked, but you know, then they would go on vacations without me. And I'm just like, here's $20. Go to Rotacos, grab something to eat, and I'd stand in front of the liquor store and buy ShopRite, get some beer.
Wait, your parents went on vacation without you?
Oh yeah, bro.
Home Alone.
Yes, exactly. I was the Home Alone kid, but we had brown hair. That's the only difference.
It's such a foreign world to me. And I know you have children.
I got three, yeah.
And it's such a foreign world to me. You know, I would live and die for my kids, and I go on vacation without them. Yeah. Listen, there are times when you and your wife need some alone time. I get that. I understand that. But you make sure the kids are taken care of.
And this is back in the day without cell phones.
Oh, man.
Yeah, they would just imagine being away. They would just haul ass to Pennsylvania, go camping. It's like, here's $20, and there's some bologna in the fridge. See on Sunday. And I'm like, okay, I'll survive.
Party.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I'll survive. There's no, you know, if I got to steal food, I'll steal food. But I'm going to survive either way. So that's why I had that survival mechanism, you know, from 12 and 13 years old. It's like, I'll figure it out.
So how did you come across joining the military?
Well, for me, I was in Belleville High School. I got thrown out for hitting a teacher in the head with a disc. So they threw me out.
Okay.
And I got a job until I turned 17. And I decided I'm going to either join the military and go to jail. And I did both in the military. So at 17, you know, I'm partying. It's funny. I'm partying in Germany. In Oktoberfest, roading for Joan Jett at 17 years old.
So you see the trail of women going into her dressing room?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm just rocking and roll. I'm living a rock and roll lifestyle at 17 and 19.
Did it ever get old, or you were thinking, this is it? This is what I want?
Well, no. You know what it is? I never planned to live past the age of 20. So, you know, I'm gonna live hard. You know, I'm going to die young and leave a good-looking corpse. That was my goal. And it really was. And so I would drink all week and then take acid from Friday night to Sunday night.
So now
for 2 years straight.
You graduated from liquor to much more illicit drugs.
Well, yeah, because in the military, they can't drug test you for acid because you have to do a spinal tap. It's $10,000 for them to do that. So they're not going to test you. So I found a way. That's what I got into.
NCAA was the same with steroids.
Yeah.
So, you know, for 2 years, from 17 to 19, that's all I did. I was a soldier during the day, and I was the party animal at night.
And now you're out on your own, and you're...
Yeah.
Yeah, now there's no leashes on you at all. You're just free to do whatever you want to do. But they took a 17-year-old kid who obviously has a problem with alcohol. It leads you to wonder what their selection process is like. So,
They took me. I mean, I didn't even have a GED.
I was going to ask you if you got a GED.
No, I don't even have a GED now. But for me, you know, I got street smarts and I got book smarts now, so I don't need a GED. But for them, you're like, yeah, come on in. We'll take anybody at this point.
Well, in the 80s, I mean, we weren't in an active war in the 80s. So, and peace I know time. The military was low at that point. We didn't really need them. There was conflicts in here and there, but there was nothing active.
Nope. So they're like, yeah, you want to join? I'm like, yeah, why not? I got nothing else going on. So, but after 2 years, and I got busted 8 times, you know, they're like, yeah, I don't think this is going to work out.
So how did you get through boot camp having this alcohol problem?
Oh, man, it was tough. Because I went to basic at 120 pounds. I couldn't even do 10 push-ups. So they actually had to recycle me because I couldn't even do the physical work.
So now we're in stripes.
Yeah. It was actually, yeah, exactly.
Sergeant Holker.
But back then they put you in a big yellow suit. You're in a yellow jumpsuit. So they recycled me for a few times. But once I got it and once I realized, all right, this is just a mind fuck.
Yep.
That's all this is. That's all it is. And I'm like, once I got that, I'm like, okay,
I got this. Guy that walked in and said, my name's Richard, but if you call me Richard, I'll kill you.
No.
My name is Dewey Oxberger. Now,
I wish I have the picture. I'll show it to you guys. I went to, because I was a big wrestling fan. I'm a big wrestling fan, right? And I loved Ric Flair. I loved Ric Flair. And my hair was like down here. So I dyed my hair platinum.
Oh.
And the night before, I'm going, oh, shit. I got to go to basic with platinum hair. I try to dye it back and don't turn red. So I went to basic. My hair was out to here. And they just rode me bad. I mean, I had earrings up. I had like both ears pierced. They were fighting to shave me. Like,
you're a walking, talking nickname at this point.
Yeah, and then you're like, you're from Jersey? You're a street kid from Jersey? They wore me out. They wore me out.
What branch did you go into?
I joined the Army. I was a tanker. That was my job, which I loved. It was freaking awesome. But, you know, once I realized, it's a mind fuck. Once I realized, okay, you're not going to kill me. I might pass out. And then I just started crushing it. As soon as I realized it's just a mind game, I crushed it.
So how many weeks was basic?
Back when I went in 86, it was one station unit training. So you went to basic and AIT at the same place.
Okay.
So I think it was like 4 months.
4 months. So how long did it take you to figure out the game? And I want to ask you the same question about the police academy. How long did it for you to figure out that this is strictly just a mind fuck?
First week,
you got quick, Mike.
Probably orientation day. Oh, yeah. When you come home and tell everybody how bad orientation day was, it's like, they'll calm down after that.
Yeah.
It's all a mind game.
I realized that the game after like about 3 weeks, which was just to break you down and build you up. And once I figured that out, I was like, maybe a little sooner than that. But once I figured that out, I didn't have to be so the tough guy. Like I didn't have to just do whatever they told me to do. And I did. Don't get me wrong. I wasn't insubordinate or anything. But I realized that they're just trying to break down all the individuals. And at that point, I wasn't an individual. I was good at doing what I had to do. So you get through basic.
But now, listen, this is a cool story. Is that when I got there, I couldn't even pass the PT test. Now, once I figured the game out, they were doing PT at like 5 a.m. And then we'd cut off at 4 a.m. I would do PT again, and then I would do 100 push-ups before I went to bed because I knew the game. So by the end, I was actually maxing out the push-ups, the sit-ups, and the run.
Still drinking?
No, I couldn't. There was no alcohol at that time. So okay. I was going through that.
DTs.
Yeah, exactly. But I was rocking it. I was crushing it because I realized, okay, you want to play the game? Like Triple H says, it's time to play the game.
Was there anything in your head at that point saying, hey, listen, I'm pretty good at this without the alcohol? Maybe that wasn't the path.
Nah, I was like, man, well, I got to find a place to go.
I can't wait to get over this so I get back to the
exactly.
alcohol.
Exactly. And then I'm at Fort Knox, and it's a dry county. And I'm like, really? The one place I go is a dry county. So we had to go to Louisville in order to get drunk on Family Day weekend.
Would you drink Goldschlager?
I don't even remember. Whatever it was. I just drank whatever it was. I remember
it had the gold flakes in it.
We were drinking like Meister, bro. It was just that bad.
No, when we were in college, we were drinking Busch beer. It was $8.16 a case.
Rheingold.
Yeah.
Rheingold, which
was Pabst Blue Ribbons.
Pabst Blue Ribbons is now a premium beer.
PBRs, yeah.
That's a premium beer.
PBRs.
But it was just whatever rot gut we could get at that particular time.
Yeah. Rolling Rock.
Is there any one incident in Basic or shortly after Basic that stands out? You were stationed at Fort Knox.
Yeah, and I wrote about it in my book. Is in 1986 is when I got cured of racism.
Okay, you have to go on a little bit more depth on that one.
Cured.
I got cured of it because my roommate, the gentleman who's from Alabama, like 6'5", 260.
That's enough to cure you.
Yeah. And and he was razzing me because I was a shitbag, obviously. And I called him the N-word.
Ooh.
And he looked at me and he's like,
hard R though, right? Not the A.
It was hard. And he goes, I know you didn't just say that to me, did you? I'm like, yeah, you want me to repeat it? And I did. And he's like, all right, come with me. So he locked the room, he locked the door, literally beat my ass for like 2 hours. And then he sat me down, popped open a beer with me, and then he told me about how his grandparents marched with Martha Luther King. You know, March, what it was like growing up as a somebody from family sharecroppers.
See, you being from the North and him being from Alabama, where they saw it
firsthand,
they have a lot different perspective. And yeah. I know this because of Chris Anderson. So yeah. Chris Anderson's from Alabama.
Yeah.
And they're it's still skewed down there. Mm-hmm. Like it's still unacceptable for a black man to be seen with a white woman.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which
South,
is crazy.
South Carolina too.
Which is crazy. Because it's 2024.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, let's get over it. We're not fighting the Civil War no more.
But well, now, they are down there still.
But like
from Virginia yeah, on I south, know. They're still
but
fighting
we're friends
the Civil
to
War.
This day, me and him.
Yeah.
And when we after we got together, and then we had another friend that I roomed with, and he was from Compton, California, we would walk through the motor pool. I would call him Porch Monkey. He would call me Cracker because we were best friends.
Yeah.
And people were like, what? Did I just hear that? And like we would be in my room, and I'd be bumping NWA, Tupac, Biggie. Because I after that, I never saw color. It was just people were just people. And I still don't see it to this day. Well, I just people are just people.
So I have this argument with my son. He likes rap. Okay, but what he listens to is not rap. So I don't see color. I see shitty music.
Yeah. Okay.
And I'm trying to we were in Lancaster, Pennsylvania over the weekend. So it's a 2.5 hour drive back and we're going through songs. I'm like, no, this is because I am a fan of like 80s rap. Yeah. And maybe early 90s stuff.
Sugar Hill Gang,
LL Cool J, Kool Moe Dee, you know, all those things.
Tone Loc.
And I'm playing them these things.
Yeah, you weren't playing any gangster rap. No. That was just all well, mainstream.
You know, California Love. I played in California Love by Pop. Tupac. And but I'm playing these things. I'm like, this is, there's a difference because it's got, there's a beat to it and they're able to stay with the beat. These guys are real musicians. This shit that you're listening to, it's all auto-tuned. You can tell it's auto-tuned. There's no beat. Every other word is bitch or motherfucker or the N-word. And I'm like, I just don't, there's nothing, there's no reason for that stuff. It's just gratuitous language in there. There's no musician.
It's like they're pushing the envelope to see what they can get away with.
Yeah, that's over. You know,
there's really no story to a lot of those songs.
Yeah.
You know, you listen to, you know, Mama Said Knock You Out by LL Cool J. All right, there's a beat to it. There's something you can bob your head to it. I'm listening to this stuff. I'm like, it's freaking horrible. So yeah. I don't see color. I see shitty music.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, but like I said, even when I work out, I mean, I still listen. I still got DMX. I still listen to Pac. I still listen to, but I'm a 55-year-old guy. So when I'm walking, I'm in the gym and I'm mouthing the words of DMX and people are looking at me like, not supposed to say that. I'm like, I bought the album. I can say what I want to say.
You got your pass as soon as you paid that money.
Exactly.
But that's kind of cool, though. So you went into the Army with one mindset.
Yeah.
This mindset of being from the North. And it's odd because being from the North, we're around everybody. You know, it's just a huge
Yeah, but when you're from
pot.
Nutley,
no, I was gonna say, Nutley
it's
and
mostly all Italians.
Yeah, exactly.
Italians and Polish people. So there's not all, it used to be, a lot of people are moving up from Newark and Belleville, but it used to be straight white in
Nutley, you know. If you weren't Italian, you were a minority.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just, you know, you go down south and you see people's views and you see their differences of opinion, and I just never get it. I never understand it because I guess it's from where I'm from.
Yeah.
And how you're raised. Like, I say it all the time.
Oh, I was raised in an incredibly racist household.
But I say it all the time. To me, racism is learned behavior.
It is.
You could take a white kid, a black kid, a Hispanic kid, Asian kid, put them on a playground, they're going to play all day.
I remember I got the shit knocked out of me once because I said Willie Mays is a good baseball player. I swear to God. You know, you see that catch, that over-the-shoulder catch.
Yeah. Say, hey, kid, Willie Mays. Yeah. Yeah.
So he comes over the shoulder. I'm like, wow, he's a great baseball player. And I was not very popular in my house. The key component to any law enforcement officer being the best version of themselves is through education. Sherry Alsop is a leader in providing that education to police agencies, preparing them for the all-too-frequent dealings with sexual assault victims.
You've seen Sherry on episode 169 of the Suffering Podcast. She survived incest and almost daily sexual assault, so she comes from a place of experience and true understanding.
Sherry has the intelligence, commitment, and compassion to open the eyes of those on the front lines, while providing the tools to effectively deal with a difficult situation. Sherry's instruction comes from experience and multiple certifications.
Training with Sherry will offer on-site training, customized schedules, specialized instruction, tailored from a victim's perspective.
you are going to hear Sherry's heart-wrenching but inspiring survivor story. Learn proprietary trauma-informed training techniques. Uncovered victim-centered interview methods while earning continuing education credits according to your state guidelines. To be the best, you must learn from the best. Let Sherry also guide you through the delicate cases of sexual assault from a victim's point of view.
Be a source of comfort to those victims affected by these traumatic experiences while producing a solid investigation and uncovering details that often go unnoticed.
To find out more or to contact Sherry Alsop, go to SherryAlsop.com. That's SherryAlsup.com. But, you know, as I went to college and I got out of that environment, I started to see the hypocrisy in it. And after this guy knocked the shit out of you for 2 hours, did you finally see the hypocrisy in racism?
Yeah, that's why I said I was cured from that day on. Because then I'm like, all right, you know, let me, because I like to read. And like I just did an interview with some lady and she was like, well, have you ever read the Quran? And I'm like, actually, yes, I have read the Quran.
I've read the Quran.
You know, and I've studied, you know, I love to study. I'll watch a documentary being made about a documentary. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, well, let me see where this guy's coming from. And then when I got older and I became homeless and a colored family brought me in and I lived with them for 2 years, that's when I realized the patriarch, where it all came from. So for me, I have a different perspective because a lot of people don't exactly live with a colored family for a couple of years.
So the funny thing is you're in the military and it doesn't sound like you're fitting real well. All right.
Not at all.
So you said you were in a break 8 times?
Yeah, eight times. Yeah.
What did you get caught for?
Drinking and driving, drugs, missing a four-star general's funeral on a funeral detail, public drunkenness. I was in Austin, Texas, and I wound up in Dallas 4 hours away. No driver's license, just some chick brought me there. All right, let's go.
Sounds like a plan.
Yeah.
So for me, I just got in a lot of trouble. But what saved me is I was that guy that you put me in the field, I'm the man you want.
So you were
I was the field dog.
You were a battle soldier.
Oh yeah, I was the guy. You want me to step 72 hours? Good. Let's slam some Red Bulls. We're good. I'm ready to roll. But you bring me into garrison, you put me in the rear with the gear, I'm in trouble.
So Jesse Ventura says that. So Jesse Ventura says, I was a great wartime soldier.
Yeah.
I was a horrible peacetime soldier.
And that's exactly how I was my first iteration. My second iteration, I started out again as a shitbag and then I went from worst to first. So
how, after 8 times in military jail, the break, how did they come to you and say, hey, maybe this isn't for you?
Well, after I got busted the last time and they're like, I'm your uncle and I don't want you to be my nephew anymore. So you got to go. Your plane leaves on Monday.
Oh, they just threw you out.
They're like, you're done. So I got under honorable condition. So it wasn't an honorable condition.
So it's not dishonorable. I know
it was under honorable, which means it can upgrade in like 6 months if you push for it. But I'm like, the fuck am I going to push for?
You figure you're never coming back.
Yeah, I ain't coming back. You just threw me out. I ain't coming back. And nobody ever goes back in after being thrown out. I don't think I've heard.
I've never heard of it.
Neither have I.
Maybe like one person I know that ever got back in.
I never heard of them letting them back in after they got thrown out.
Yeah, right.
It's like you get thrown out of the police academy and you're not going to say, come back in two weeks later.
Well, that actually happens now. It's crazy. Yeah.
Oh, believe me, I know.
From the time you left the military until your reenlistment, what was your life like? Did you come back to New Jersey?
Oh, yeah, I came back and I lived on St. Mary's Place in Belleville. Well, it was right on the street from Belleville and Nutley over by the Pathmark. It used to be Pathmark. And I went to live with that mom and dad, but you know, I just partied for 2 years.
Should have stayed
around the whole world.
Should have stayed at the Washington Motel.
And they're like,
Belleville Motor Lodge.
Yeah, you check in, but you pay by the hour. The
BML.
But you know, my dad came off the boat from Italy, didn't speak the language, but he worked his ass off, 2 jobs, bought 2 houses cash, side hustle. So you know, I got home at 19. He's like, you got to be in by 10. What do you mean? I just partied with Joe Judge. You want me to be in bed by 10? He's like, yeah, I got to be up at 5. I got to support this family. I got 2 families to support.
They're still drinking.
No, well, yeah, but they partied on the weekends. So, okay. You know, and then dad's like, listen, if you can't go by my rules, you got to go. And I'm like, as a father now, I'm like, I get it. Yeah. I'm like, I understand. But he's like, if you can't go by my rules, you got to go. I lived in my truck for 18 months, and I lived in a crack house in Nutley. I actually lived in, they don't call it a crack house. It was one of the tenements where all the homeless people live. And I lived there for, I was eating out of garbage cans and actually eating dented cans out of ShopRite in Nutley. I used to go pick out the garbage, you know, all the food out of the garbage.
Was it like a flop house or was it like a controlled?
It was like a flop house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But squatters.
Yep. But my attitude was so bad, I actually got thrown out of a crack house. So, you know, your attitude's bad when you get thrown out of a crack
house. So I'm starting to see a pattern here.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah,
you think?
Thrown out of high school, thrown out of the military, thrown out of a crack house.
Thrown out of your own house.
Thrown out of your own house.
Then thrown out of a crack house.
Then thrown out of a crack house.
Yeah, so you see something.
Yeah, I'm starting to see a pattern here.
Think he's going
to
get thrown out of the studio tonight?
that I hope not. I'll behave with my energy drink here.
I thought it was a White Claw when I first walked in.
Yeah, like, no.
At any point in this time, did you figure, God, what am I doing to myself here? Because I'm sure the pleasure is all gone from doing the drugs and the alcohol.
Well, and for me, you know, and I'm 19 years old. I got no future, so I'm just surviving. You know, I'm just trying not to get sick.
Was your body breaking down at all?
No. I mean, I was still strong as a bull, so that I was still hitting the gym because my cousin owned Gold's Gym down in Belleville, so I was still hitting the gym all the time. So
you were able to look the part of a functioning member of alcoholic. Society.
Oh, yeah.
A functioning alcoholic also.
Yeah, and I worked. And I worked full time.
So that's like Charlie. So our friend Charlie Cifarelli, who was – drugs, alcohol, but he was a gym guy. So he never looked like that. So nobody ever really paid attention. He wasn't one of these people sleeping on the street. He was homeless for a short period of time, but he just never looked the part. So he was able to squeak through.
Yeah. And addicts and alcoholics, you can learn to play the system. You know, we're the greatest salespeople in the world. So I can look perfectly fine. Even today, I can look fine here, but you know, like I put something on my social media page the other day. Imposter syndrome kicked my ass last week. Yeah. So I could be looking great here, but, you know, I get home sometimes and I'm like, you know, we all have that. We all have that.
That's
know?
Because you advocate for a certain lifestyle in what you do now. And I want to pass this off to you as well, because I know I feel this. You advocate for a certain lifestyle, and then there's certain things in your life that are a little jacked up. And then you start feeling, well, like, I'm sitting here talking about this, but I'm not living exactly. it. And you start getting really down on yourself.
Well, it's the imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
Because, you know, for me, you know, even coming here, I felt kind of weird because, you know, I'm still 60% blind. And having an Uber here and not being able to drive. And sometimes that imposter syndrome was like, who am I to be on their show? Or who am I to be interviewing David Meltzer or Robert Kiyosaki? You know, these people who are, you're just a ninth grade dropout. And then, you know, some people would be like, Rich, you are the real deal. So for me, I we all go through it. It just, I think it's the brave people that are willing to say, I struggle with it too.
Yeah, I think everybody struggles. I know I certainly struggle with it all the time. You know, it's who the hell am I? Like, what are you talking? Who the hell am I? I'm nobody.
You know, Kevin, I go through that a lot with this show too.
Yeah.
Because we're not, you know, every day isn't, you know, sunshine and rainbows. Sometimes you're having a bad day, and we got to come in here and talk to someone else about their bed.
Well, how many times? So you see somebody come in this show, and they're so excited, and they're like, "I can't believe I'm here" and stuff. And you and I walk up to the studio, is like, "Okay, yeah, what's up, Mike? How you doing?
How was your week?"
Yeah, so I think that's where the imposter syndrome, where you see somebody else's reaction, but we have our own little personal views of each other and ourselves. Yeah. And they don't fit. They're not in alignment with, say, somebody else might see us. But you're kicked out of the crack house. How long?
So he got kicked out of a crack house. So he figured he'd rejoin the military.
Yeah. So yeah. What? That's what I'm trying to find that segue into. Like, well, I got nothing else. Let me see what I can do.
Well, this is where I might get thrown out of the. I might get thrown out of the studio now. I actually robbed a police officer.
Oh, pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Not smart.
Not the smartest move.
No,
but
no,
it ballsy.
But he owned a bar, and he asked me to bartend for him. an alcoholic, you know, which is not smart. But I bartended for him on New Year's Eve in 1989. going into 89, and I was 20. And everything was going great until like 8 hours later, he knocked on the door, three of his buddies coming to lock me up. I gave away like $3,000 worth of free drinks. Oof. And
you were pretty popular
and
that night.
Oh, yeah. And I had like $5,000 in my pocket. And he told me, you know, he's like, listen, he came to lock me up. He's like, you're 20 years old. You robbed a police officer. Let's just get that straight. So you're going to go to big boy jail for at least 5 years. And you're going to do all five. He's like, and you're going to be somebody's bitch because you're still good looking. He says, you're going to be a white boy. You're going to jail. You're going to be somebody's bitch. Or you can get me my money back in 24 hours. And you got to go to your first AA meeting tomorrow. And you got to do 90 days in a row.
That's a good cop.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you right now, that guy was placed in your life for a reason. Mm-hmm. And there are certain cops out there that are angels. And I don't care what anybody says. They're placed in front of people for a reason.
Yep. And if I wish I could remember, I would take him out for the biggest lobster dinner, whatever you want. I got you.
His last name was Donaldson.
you're a little bit light. I mean, you're not tanning as much as
his partner was Felice, I think, wasn't it?
Yes, exactly. We age backwards like Dick Clark. So keep going.
So, you know, I begged and I borrowed. I didn't steal. I got the money back and I borrowed it and I paid it all back. And I hit my first meeting at St. Mary's Place in Belleville. And Nutley then, the Church of St. Mary's Place. I was still drunk and hungover that morning. But he said to do 90 meetings. I hit 300 in a row, and I haven't had a drink since 1989.
Congratulations.
So I quit at the age of 20.
He didn't even make drinking age.
I didn't even make the drinking age. And I haven't had a drink or even anything stronger than an aspirin for the last 35 years. But that police officer, you know, I've always had angels around me. And he was just one of them that changed my world.
Can you imagine you run into a guy who's grizzled, who's been beaten down by the system? You would have probably done five long years.
Yeah.
And he said, you're going to do five.
Yeah.
He said, especially if you robbed an officer, you're doing five.
And thrown out of the military.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, you have a bad record already. You don't have a GED, so you're going to jail for five. So
you need to Oprah that. You need to do an Oprah request on who that guy owned. Do you know what town it is, right?
I don't even remember.
Where were you bartending?
It was in Newark, downtown Newark.
Somewhere. It was in Newark? Was he a Newark cop?
I think so.
All right. You can find that information out because that right there, that guy deserves at least a pat on the back.
Oh, he deserves more than that.
He turned your life around.
Yeah, he did.
He turned your life around right there.
Yeah. And as police officers, that's really like that's the brass ring for us.
That's the honorable thing to do.
It's that one, you reach that one person and you make an impact on their lives. Yeah. So, you know, I encourage you to find that person out and I'll be willing, I know Mike will be willing as well to give you any help that we can on that one.
Yeah, because like I said, you know, he was one of my angels and I've had a couple angels in my life and he's one of them.
You know, probably be in his 70s.
Yeah.
So
bring him on the show.
Yeah. God. Yeah.
He saved my bacon literally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're clean now. You're looking at things with new eyes. What changed when you finally sobered up?
Well, as my uncle is the one that's bailing, one of the ones that's bailing me out. Now he was a Korean War veteran and he was a boxing champion of the Army and a Korean War veteran. And he was a badass. He was like 5'4", but he was just a fireplug. And he looked at me when I'm about to get locked up and bail you out. He's like, you know what? I knew you didn't have what it takes to be a military man.
Ooh.
Ouch.
Yeah. And it just ate at me for like 9 months. I couldn't sleep at night. I'm like, because I respected him. I mean, he didn't have a fourth grade education, retired a multimillionaire, boxing champion, a Korean War hero. And he's telling me he knew I couldn't be a soldier. And it just ate at me. And I'm like, I got to get back in. Everybody's like, you can't get back in. You got thrown out. There's no way you can get back in. And somebody says, well, you can get a move from a general, I mean, from an under honorable to a general discharge. And you might be able to get into a National Guard unit. So I'm going, so you're saying there's a chance. So I had to get letters written by a congressman. I had to get letters written by my sponsor from AA, from my place where I was working. I had to get letters written, and I had to go through, jump through hoops. And eventually I found a unit in Pennsylvania that said, all right, we'll take a chance on you. So they let me back in 1990, I think, or 91, they let me back in. And I was a shitty soldier. I was still a shitty soldier.
You were trying to learn how to be an adult.
I was struggling. But now, if you know me at all, anything that happened from ages 11 on is 100% my fault. I take 100% responsibility for it. So I was just being an asshole. And I was going to, you know, I joined the National Guard, and I got busted a couple more times. And I moved to South Carolina. I got busted a couple more times. And they were going to throw me out again at the end of September 2001. But because of what happened on 9/11, totally changed my whole world, rocked my world. And my whole life changed when they started pulling bodies out of the Pentagon. Because all my stuff, I'm watching the TV. You guys remember more than anybody. You know, when that shit was happening, it was live.
Yeah,
I mean, there was no editing. You know, there you can hear the bodies crashing, going through the
jumping out of the World Trade Center. You can hear bodies splashing,
bouncing, and hitting cars, and we knew people that were in the buildings that day. But as I'm watching this unfurl, all my shit is on the right side of the TV because I got to turn all my shit in again. So I'm being thrown out again, and I looked. When they were pulling bodies out of the Pentagon, I'm like, I've wasted 27 years of my life. And all these guys and girls, all they want to do is go to work and come home. They're not coming home. And I literally broke down on my couch and I cried out to God. I said, Lord, give me another chance. You know, I promise you that I'm going to dedicate the rest of my life to helping people that can't help themselves. So the man that woke up on the morning of September 11th is not the same guy that went to bed on September 11th. And even I went out and got my tattoo that I have right now, September 11th, some gave all. So for me, from that moment on is when I've lived to help others.
That seemed like, was that your lowest point?
That was, and when I attempted suicide in Labor Day 2012. So there's three things, major impacts in my life. And 9/11 was probably one of the biggest.
But that was your start of the climb up, September 11th.
Yeah, and because you know, once I realized, all right, I wasted 27 years. You know, I'm not a child anymore, and I seen all my brethren being pulled out of the Pentagon, and I seen 343, you know, firefighters and first responders get killed in towers. All they did is want to go to work and come home. What am I doing with my life? And how can I honor that? And so that's that moment is where I said, no, I'm going to dedicate my life is helping people that can't help themselves.
You were on your journey from becoming worst to first.
Yeah.
Like you said, you were the worst officer in 3 years it took you. So what changed, though? I mean, something had to change in the way you do daily business.
Well, what happened was, because I went to my first sergeant, my company commander, I called him that day. Same day, and I'm like, I need to talk to you. And they're like,
you again?
You're like, wait a minute, you spend more time in his office than I do. And I said, listen, this is what happened. I'm like, I know you're going to throw me out. And I'm like, I'm okay with that because I deserve it 100%. I said, please keep me. And they both looked in my eyes, and I'm still friends with them today, like 30 years later. And they said, you're not the same man that you were last week. So, but then we had drill that weekend, and I decided my way's not working anymore. So I got there, drill was at 7. I got there at 5, and there were still cars there before I got there. And the people that were there were early were all the high ranking brass. So I'm like, okay. And then I stayed till everyone went home. So when everybody else went home at 5, they were there at like 8 o'clock. And so I kind of put it together, like in AA, they teach you, you know, the best meetings happen before the meeting.
Yeah.
After the meeting, you know, make the coffee.
Happens with podcasts too sometimes.
Yeah. So, you know,
we have a good conversation before we sit down.
Yeah. So, you know, so I just said, okay, so I'm going to do what winners do. If success leaves clues. What are the winners doing and what are the losers doing? And then when I got there and I, they busted me from E4 to E0, so I'm back to nothing again. I started looking at what the E4s were doing, and I'm like, okay, if I do that, I'm going to stay there. So I started following all the E7s and E8s like a pain in the ass. I was just that guy. I was up their ass constantly. And I'm asked, well, how did you do it? You know, how did you become successful? Show me. I'm humble. Teach me. And I had some great NCOs that took me under their wings and said, you need to max your PT scores. You need to go to correspondence courses. You need to volunteer for everything. You need to go to classes. And I'm like, all right, I'm good. Just tell me what to do and I'll do it.
Well, you humbled yourself.
Oh, yeah.
So the question. Well,
plus, now you didn't have alcohol taking up most of your time.
Yeah. And I had to have something, you know, I'm like, well, what do I do? If I'm going to be the best, what do I got to do? Like, if I want to be the best podcaster, I hired the best podcast coach, which is John Lee Dumas. He's my coach. So if I'm going to go, if I'm going to hire somebody, I want to see what the best is doing. And then, but if I'm just hiring somebody just same as me or below me, I'm not going to get anywhere. And it hit me that day. Success leaves clues. So pick the winners and see what they do. Follow them.
So you go through your military career. You're doing well. Why leave the military?
My first drill in New Jersey, one of my vehicles broke down, and it was an up-armored Humvee. So if you ever seen the Humvees on Halo, that's what it looked like. And I was backing the guy off on 287, and instead of him hitting the brakes, he hit the gas and ran over the whole right side of my body, ran over my head, and that's why I'm blind. I'm blind today. So I got hurt on duty, and I shook it off because back then, I think I was like 175, shredded.
Sir, you just had a Humvee roll over your body.
Well, I was on other supplements at the time. So, but I just shook it off. But then I started, within 2 hours, I was totally blind. About 80% blind, I would say. And eventually they figured, well, you can't see. You can't see. You can't shoot. So we don't need you. And then they medically discharged me after 23 years.
That had to be a big blow to your psyche, especially when you put that much work.
You, like you said, you screwed up 27 years of your life. Now you finally got back on track and you're finally getting there. And then that happens.
Yeah. And, you know, even like you guys, you know, I've had you on my show. We talked, you know, they don't ever tell you when you're going through, you know, a boot camp or you're going through your classes that you got a shelf life. Nobody ever say, Kevin, you know, you're not going to be a cop forever. And, we're young, dumb, and full of cum. We think we're going to live forever.
Yeah.
Or think we're going to, but eventually when you got to hang up that uniform for the last time. Well,
for both of us, we went to work and that night we were never allowed to go back.
Yeah. And when you're no longer that thing, you're no longer Sergeant Kevin, you know, you're no longer this rank. You're no longer, they told me, you're no longer Sergeant Kaufman. Well, who am I? Who's Richard? Because I don't know I don't have a Richard. Everything was Sergeant Kaufman. Everything was 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Well, now, who am I? I don't have vision. I was back at, I think after like six surgeries, I was at like 50%, I think, 40%. So I don't have a vision. I don't have money coming in.
So now you don't know what your future looks like.
No, because I'm like, and it scared me to death because I don't know who Richard is.
So how did you find out who Richard is?
Well, I attempted suicide Labor Day 2012 because I knew I had till midnight to get out of the military. And if you die on duty, your wife or family gets like 500 grand. So I figured if I took myself out, they'd be taken care of. But like Mike Tyson says, you know, everybody's got a plan to get punched in the mouth. And my 6-month-old daughter saved my life, actually, that day. What happened was when I was in the military, I always loved Dodge Rams. And I was like, oh, I want to get a big pimped out Dodge Ram 1500. So I bought one. And so I got in the truck and I called my wife and I said, honey, you know, I love you. And because we were down in Wildwood. So we're going to go down for the Wildwood for the week on our Labor Day. I was going to meet her down there with the kids. And I knew I was going to take myself out. And I knew I was never going to talk to my wife again. And I told her I loved her. I've always loved you. And I told her, I had a six-month-old baby at home, two boys. And I knew I was never going to see him again. I said, I know it's not. I'm never going to see you again. I can't tell her that. But, you know, once I told her I loved her and I got in the car. And my plan was, like I said, everybody has a plan until you get punched in the mouth. I'd get in the truck, you know, hit 100 miles an hour, put it on cruise, put the radio on, and eventually I'm going to go off the road and because concrete pylons everywhere going down, you know, going down the shore. So that's what I did. I got up to like 100 miles an hour, put it on cruise, put the radio on. Now, I'm not a, I don't like country, but I put country music on. I don't know why. I'm like, am I going to die?
It's enough to make you kill yourself right there. You know?
And so I got up to 100. I put on cruise control, and I got the I turned the radio on, and I just shut my eyes. And you know, like when you're driving and you can feel the reflectors on the right side, all I hear is click, 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 click. I'm like, oh, I'm like 3 minutes from death. I'm like, it's 3 seconds from death. I'm like, this is a wrap. But then a song came on by George Strait. It was called I Saw God Today. And it was about a man seeing his baby for the first time. And it brought me back to the day my daughter was born. And I was the first one to ever hold her. The first one to ever change her diaper. And at that moment is when I decided I don't want to be a victim. I don't want to be the number 22. I want to be a father. I want to be a husband. You know, screw the 500 grand. I'll find a way to take care of my family. And that, and I pulled over and I called my wife and I said, I told her what happened. And she was pissed off. I told her what I was going to do. And I said, honey, if I don't go home, if I don't get help this weekend, I'm probably going to go home and eat my gun. And she said, I got you. She says, I got your back. Just come home. Just be with us. I can't get you into treatment because it's a holiday weekend. But Tuesday, we'll check you into treatment. And I started treatment that Labor Day 2012. And I've been seeing the same therapist for the last 12 years. So, you know, I've had those three different things in my life, and that's why I wear the shirt all the time. It says, today I decide. Because I could have made that decision, you know, to either go to jail or get sober.
You know, early on you said September 11th, you decided to help those who couldn't help themselves. Well, the one person who needed to help the most, you can't help them, which was yourself.
Yeah.
And first thing they teach us in the police academy is you're no good at helping anybody else if you're messed up. So take care of yourself first, and then you'll be able to go out and do all that stuff. So how did you find this weird world of podcasting post-suicide attempt?
Well, I mean, it all has to do with the lunch I had with Mr. Gary Vaynerchuk. But when you get hurt on duty and they're going to throw you out, they make you go to classes. It's called the Warrior Transition Unit. And you got to do it for like 18 months. So the first weekend I got there, everybody's playing cards. Everybody's, you know, playing checkers. And I'm like, yeah.
This ain't working.
I'm like, this ain't working. Especially with my ADD. I'm like, yeah, I can't do this. So I picked up a book by Robert Kiyosaki and Sharon Lecter, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And then I finished whatever books they had. I did their series. And then I'm like, well, who else is in a personal development? And I went to Dale Carnegie, Andrew Carnegie, you know, the Think and Grow Rich. And then I keep hearing this guy named Gary V. Gary, I'm like, who the hell is Gary V? And I found him on my phone. It wasn't a phone, it was a computer back then. And I'm like, it was nothing but Gary V for like a year. And my wife hated Gary V. She hated Gary V. He curses too much and she still hates it. I put him on, she's like, shut him off. Just shut him off. But, it got me interested to being a podcaster. And when I met him for lunch, he's the one that said, you need to write a book. You need to start a podcast. Your name is the comeback coach from now on. So he started all. He started everything. And that's how I started in a crazy world. Now
it sounds a lot better than the kicked out coach.
Yeah. But now, that's why I brought this here. I was 80% blind. And I did 300 episodes doing this on my phone. I recorded 300 episodes, not only having 40% vision. and having you to Mr. Magoo Glass to see everything. 300 episodes.
That's determination right there.
You know, and that's why I still carry this around, that, you know, I had to use the Mr. Magoo Glass for 18 months.
So out of how many episodes are you up to now?
1,200.
1,200?
Stupid. Yeah. Something crazy.
Kevin was saying you're doing like six a day.
I did six. I did seven last week, and I only had like five today. So I'm good. It was an easy day.
Aside from this wonderful guest you had on, Kevin Donaldson, what do you think your most impactful guest would be?
I've had so many. I think it might have been my first. Actually, one of my friend, Aaron Hale, if you guys ever get a chance, he's not a veteran. I mean, a first responder, but he's a veteran. He's blind and he's deaf. And he just ran the Badwater 35.
Oh. Wow.
Blind and deaf and almost beat David Goggins this time.
Wow.
And he's blind and he's deaf.
That just shows you that the limitations are only those that you put on yourself.
Yeah. And the first guy I ever interviewed, he was blind. No, he had both arms blown off, both legs blown off in Iraq. And as I'm interviewing him, because I'm using Anchor at this time, it's just audio only.
Yeah.
His wife is holding it up to his ear because they're in Aspen skiing. And he's got no arms and no legs. And he's sitting in Aspen skiing. So I'm like, wow. So because I can't see, no big deal. I got both arms. I got two good arms, two good legs. What can I do?
So that's a lot. We know a gentleman, Earl Granville. We've had him in here. Earl got his leg blown off in Afghanistan. And he's part of Warrior Strong, right?
Yeah,
Warrior Strong. Yeah. And it's a whole club of these guys, and it's just pushing beyond your limits. And he's a motivational speaker. He's a great guy. But he shows me, like, here's Earl running these tough mutters and these ultra races and things like that. And here I got two good legs and two good arms, and I'm not doing that. So it starts to turn the mirror.
Sitting on the couch at night watching TV.
It starts to turn the mirror on you where I'm putting these limitations on myself, even though I'm perfectly capable of doing all that stuff. And it really gives you a great perspective on life from somebody who just has a never quit attitude.
Yeah. And that's how the podcast all started, because anybody that's ever been successful, you know, we've all got through shit. You know, we're all dealing with the same shit. It just may be at a different level, whether you're the CEO or the janitor. So how did you get from here to here?
We're in the same storm, but different boats.
Exactly. That's right. So that, you know, if that's how the whole podcast really started, just tell me your story. How did you become successful? But what'd you go through to get there?
So I want you to give out your books too. Okay. So you have one coming out.
Yep. It's called the Podcast Blueprint, how we got over 2 million downloads and how we've, like I said, have guests, authors, athletes, millionaires, billionaires, Lee Steinberg, Dave Meltzer, Sharon Lecter, Robert Kiyosaki, how we've got these people on the show. What I did is I took everything that I spent over 60 grand and over 10,000 hours learning how to do this. So I just condensed it into one book.
And people look at where you are now and they're like, wow, you're really lucky. I don't know if you've gotten that, you know, people say, wow, you're really lucky. You know, luck had very little to do with it. This is hard work. And you know, you said something on one of your posts. Podcasting is a 4-letter word. It's work.
It's work.
Yeah. It's work. And
but it's relationships.
The harder you work, the better you're going to become at it.
But it's building relationships.
Yeah.
If I didn't meet Jessica Dalby, I wouldn't have met you. You know, I wouldn't have met your amazing new sponsor. I wouldn't have her on my show, but it was because I built a relationship with a friend of hers 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So it's building relationships that if you're going to be successful in anything, it's sort all of. About building relationships.
It's connected dots.
You know, the podcast connections are amazing.
Yeah.
You know, they really are.
Oh, so.
We've met so many people that we should never have met in our lives.
So, speaking of that, I get a call from Tom Smith the other day, and he's like, a friend of mine, Karen Conti, she was John Wayne. I told you about her. Yeah. She was John Wayne Gacy's last attorney before he was executed. And he calls me up and he goes, well, Kevin knows everybody, so I'm just going to give it. He looked her up on Instagram and saw that I follow her and she follows me. Says, can you get me into Karen Conti? She just wrote a book called Killing Time. And I was like, yeah, matter of fact, I can. And that's the cool thing. It's like, if you have somebody on your show that we would want on our show, I'd be like, hey, Richard, can you hook us up?
Yeah.
And vice versa. And that's the way it should be done. It doesn't always work that way. Because there's some
people, a lot of haters out there.
There's a lot of people who are very selfish.
Yeah.
We've run across it.
Yeah. We asked someone in the beginning if they want to come on a podcast. They said, no, we just started our own podcast.
Yeah. So they didn't want to share. But it's great advertisement. You're coming on this show.
It's cross advertising.
Speak all you want about Vertical Momentum. It's not going to take away our listeners. If anything, it's going to add to our listeners. You know, that's what you want. You want to grow.
It's all about friendships. But it's also like my wife, we were sitting at home one day. And she's like, I wish I knew this. We were watching something about, she wanted to learn how to cook something. And she's like, what do I do with this onion? And I was like, hold on. Started texting somebody and I got an answer back. And I gave her the answer. She's like, who'd you text? And I'm like, oh, it was one of the Iron Chefs, Shyman Majumdar. So she's like, wait a minute. You just text the guy that's on TV about my onions? And I'm like, yeah, because I've built that relationship for the last 6 years.
And they also, it also... They know that, like, I keep my phone contacts very close. Like, I never give out numbers.
Yeah.
Even Mike, somebody who's as close to me as Mike, if somebody, hey, can I get Mike's number? I will text him first and say, hey, this person's looking for your number. You mind if I give it? Yeah, sure. Most of 99.99% of the time, Mike's, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
But I'm waiting for that one time.
Then when he gets to a call, no, he doesn't want me to give you his number.
Yeah, no, we're good. He lost his phone.
I gave him your number.
Yeah.
That's what I gave him your number. If you want to reach out, if he wants to reach out to you, he will.
But it's amazing how if you're open and willing to build real relationships, not just online relationships, podcasting is amazing.
So why don't you give out your Instagram or your social media links? Please do.
Everything is Vertical Momentum. If you go to Vertical Momentum if you Google Vertical Momentum, we're on the first 8 pages of Google.
All right. So that'll be easy to do.
So, and we're on 35 different platforms. So we're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, Pinterest, Tumblr, Flickr, blah, blah, blah.
OnlyFans?
Yeah. Not yet, because I'm staying married, so I'm not going to OnlyFans.
You can make some good money that way.
Yeah, but I got to pay the divorce lawyer, so that's not going to happen.
So, Richard, we're coming to the end of this thing here, and we end every show the same way. You've gone through this life of getting kicked out of every situation that you've ever
been in. Even a crack house.
Even a crack house, which it shocks me. I've never heard of any. I've never heard of that. You got almost kicked out of the military twice. Once for sure.
Yeah.
But you suffered. And I know it's taught you something. So what has your suffering taught you?
Stop digging a hole. For me, it was kind of, okay. Like I said, anything from ages 11 on is all my fault. So if you're going through relationship after relationship, job after job, if you're broke, if you don't have money, if you're a failure, it's your fault. And once you, if you're in a hole, just stop digging and start saying, I'm tired of suffering. I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. So stop, stop shoveling. That's what I would say. If you're suffering, just stop the insanity.
Like Susan Powder.
Exactly.
I can't believe I remember that woman's name. Richard,
you're starting to scare me with that.
Something. Yeah, no, I get this, like, I see the white hair, but I really do appreciate you coming in.
It's my honor.
Listen,
it's
really nice meeting you.
You're like a brother, and I think we're going to do great things in the future.
Yep, man. I said, Ms. Jessica Dalby, thank you so much. Without you, this wouldn't be possible. So I want to thank her.
Well, thank you so much. And that's going to do it for this episode of the Suffering Podcast, The Suffering of Vertical Momentum with Richard Kaufman. And let's think about all the stuff that we learned. Be a walking dichotomy. A good whooping cures racism.
Yeah.
It's not a good idea to rob a cop, although it turned out pretty well for Richard. Success leaves clues. Angels are put in front of us at the right time. Humble yourself, but most importantly, we can all go from worst to first.
And stop digging.
Stop digging. Stop. I like that one. Stop digging. And that's going to do it for this episode. Don't forget to go to popple.com for a digital business card. Visit Cubita Cafe at 234 Franklin Avenue. Gus has got some wonderful food over there.
You won't be sorry if you go there. Believe me.
Everything is handmade. It is one of my favorite places in the world. And find us on all social media. That's LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, Twitter.
OnlyFans.
Follow Mike at Mike_Felice. Follow me at Real Kevin Donaldson. And of course, follow the Suffering Podcast. And we're going to see you on the next episode.